The month of October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I want to talk a little bit about a personal story today, see if it reaches some folks out there who might be reminded that staying ahead of the game is really what it's all about. Mary Ottmar from Atlantic joins us here this morning, and Mary is a breast cancer survivor. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, good morning, Jim.
How does that strike you when you hear people say a breast cancer survivor?
Well, first of all, you think it's never going to happen to you. And so it's still a little foreign to me. It's hard to for me to say it out loud, but it was reality, so I do accept it.
You know, we don't like to be labeled all the time, but, you know, once you've gone through something like that, you know, in some respects, it can be a real message to other people. And I guess that's why we wanted to kind of talk a little bit about your experience today. How did you first find out?
Well, actually, I always have had a mammogram every year for many, many years. And so it was September of 2013, September 26th, you know, some dates you remember. And I went in for my annual mammogram like I have many, many, many times. And I left the hospital, I went home, and there was a message on my answering machine to call the hospital. So I did, and she said, Mary, we need to have you come back in to retake your mammogram. And I thought, oh, really? Somebody pushed the wrong button, or I must have moved, or there must have been a problem somewhere. So I got back in the car, and I went back and had that. And she said, you may need to just stay. Don't get dressed, because depending on what we see, we're going to want to do an ultrasound. And I looked at her and I said, well, I'm not pregnant, so I don't know why you'd want to do an ultrasound. And she said, no, we'll do an ultrasound of your breast. And I thought, well, all right, you know, okay. So I waited, and she came back in and said, we're going to take you across the hall and do an ultrasound. Well, I was a little bit not real happy because I had things to do. It was a beautiful sunny day. I like gardening. I had some plants I needed to get home and divide. And here I am in the hospital in a hospital gown. So they went in, did the ultrasound, and she said, get dressed, but don't leave just yet. We're going to have the technician look at it. So they did, and she said, we need to have you go and do an MRI. We're going to do a biopsy. I went, oh boy, now this is getting to be a little bit more serious. So they took me out and they did the biopsy, and then I had to wait for 3 days to get the results. And at this time, your anxiety is a little bit high.
That's got to be a long 3 days.
It's a very long 3 days, and you try to keep busy and not think the worst, and yet you're thinking, oh, what, you know, could I possibly have breast cancer? I felt good. I had no pain. I was active, continued to do things. I couldn't imagine that would happen to me. So 3 days later, as I said, it was September 26th, 2013, I got the call to come in and see Dr. Okerblum, who was my oncologist, who was the oncologist there. And he said, these are not phone calls or consultations I enjoy making, but he said, you have breast cancer. And my first reaction was, am I going to die? And I looked right at him and I asked him that. And he said, well, Mary, yes, you are going to die, but not from this. And so he lightened the room at that point because he said, we're all going to die at some point. But he said, we've caught this early, and so we're going to stay on top of it. And then from then, I started my treatments. I had a mastectomy, and then I started my treatments. And after my first mastectomy, they discovered the tumor was one of those aggressive, invasive types of cancer. It's called HER2 negative. And so I chose to have a second mastectomy as a precaution. And then I did have chemo every 3 weeks for a year. I figured it up. It was about 144 hours of chemotherapy, which at the time, you're not sure you're going to make it through, but you do. And so that's kind of how it all started, Jim.
Did you go through the whole range of emotions, or did you just feel awful or feel angry? What kind of emotional range did you go through?
I never felt angry. I think my faith helped me get through that. I never said, why me? I I don't know why I didn't say that, but I was disappointed, mostly because I've known many people that have been through that cancer journey and the toll it takes on you physically and emotionally. And I knew that it would kind of curb my activity for a while, that I wouldn't have the energy to do some of the things that I enjoy doing. So I was very disappointed. I was sad, very sad. And but I never got angry, I guess. But you do go through a lot of emotion. And once I started going through the chemo, it was Thanksgiving Day, 2013, and I was sitting at the kitchen table. My son had come home from California. My brother had come home from North Carolina. The whole family was coming that noon for Thanksgiving dinner. And that, I guess, was a little bit shocking to me because we hadn't really done that at my house to have a big Thanksgiving dinner. But my husband had arranged for all that. And then I thought, whoa, is this the last Thanksgiving I'm going to have? Because everybody's coming home and my family's pretty large, so it was a big household. And so at the breakfast table Thanksgiving morning, I said, I'm going to go get ready. And I was not feeling the best, and I went into the bathroom to start combing my hair, and my hair came out. So once I lost my hair and I was bald, then that was another sadness for me. You know, I think any time you lose part of you, losing a breast, losing your hair, I lost all my fingernails, my eyebrows, my eyelashes. You know, that's part of your treatment when you go through chemo. And so when you start losing things like that, it's a sadness. But I tried to realize it's just part of the journey, and it wasn't forever. And so I kept telling myself, I'm going to get through this. And, well, back to my hair story. So I came out, and I told my son, I said, my hair's coming out. So he said, Mom, we got this. So he came in and took a scissors and just started cutting it. Then took a razor, and he shaved my whole head. He said, you know, this way it's not going to fall out in the food and in the bathroom and in the bed and on the floor. And I've had other people tell me that was the best thing to do, because as your hair starts breaking off, it's best just to get rid of it. So I was bald for about a year and a half. It gave me a new understanding of men that don't have hair. It's cold in the wintertime, I can tell you that. But again, I realized it's just hair. You know, it's not the end of the world.
Is part of that taking control of the situation, too?
I think so. You have to just, or I had to just accept the fact that I'm not in control of everything, you know. And again, that's my faith. I believe in a higher power. And fortunately, my faith and my family was very supportive, and a lot of friends. And so it helped me get through that journey.
And that's exactly where I was going next. You go through all the treatments and consultations and things through the medical professionals. But also equally important is the support that you get from everybody around you, family, friends, coworkers, if that's the case. You know, people that you spend a lot of time with, they can be very supportive and really kind of drag you through this.
And for someone like me, with my dominant personality, it's hard to accept the fact that I can't do things, because I've always been someone that kind of likes to be in charge and likes to do things for myself. I've never thought of myself as a victim. I've never needed people to do things for me. So when you get to a stage where you can't do things for yourself, it's humbling to accept help. And as a Christmas gift, I was not able to walk by myself for a while. I was kind of weak. So my son Adam said, he was going to send me a present. So I got a pink walker in the mail one day for Christmas, and it got my attention. And I thought, now I have to have a walker. And I felt like that was it was real eye-opening for me, but it also encouraged me to continue to try to walk and to try to do things and to not be dependent on that for longer than I needed to be. It was also right at Christmas time when I had two friends, extension friends, say that they wanted to come and decorate my house for Christmas. And I said, oh, no, that's not important. I don't need to have a tree put up. I don't need Christmas decorations. And they said, yes, you do. You need to continue your life as normally as you can. They came, and again, I had people going through my stuff. You know, that was a little foreign to me, but they dug out all the Christmas decorations, decorated my house, and so I got through Christmas that way.
Isn't that kind of therapy for them, though, too? Because by you allowing them to assist you in some way, they can't cure what physically ails you, but they can mm-hmm. jump in to help any way they can.
That's exactly right, Jim. People want to help. They would call or send a card and say, let us know what we can do to help you. And of course, you never know what to ask for. And so the most helpful is when you would get a phone call and said, I'm going to come and do your laundry. I said, oh, okay. Or I'm going to come and put clean sheets on your bed. I'm going to come and clean your bathroom. They would just come and do those things that needed to be done. It gave my husband a break, and it helped me out. And so those are the kinds of things that really help. So as caregivers, I would encourage you to look at those things that you might not always think about, but people don't always need gifts of hard presents, you know. They need other things to be done, washing the dishes for you or bringing soup or just the simple things, washing your windows so it's brighter to look outside, you know, those jobs that you are not able to do for a while.
You talked earlier about how you were pretty religious about getting those mammograms taken care of year after year. Now, I assume that's going to be part of the message here, too, is that folks need to be vigilant about things. And the sooner you find out what might be ailing you, the better chances you have of getting it taken care of.
That's exactly right. And I would encourage people to get their mammogram on a regular basis. And I hear women say, oh, I don't like to do that because it hurts. And that's always, it's painful and it's pinching. And I said, wait a minute. It might be a two-minute pain for a little short-term discomfort, but that's nothing compared to going through chemo or through radiation or through having surgeries. So if you can get a mammogram and detection is earlier, that saves lives. And so I was fortunate because my cancer was more aggressive, but it was caught early. And because it was caught early, I mean, I credit the Cass County Hospital. The equipment is state of the art. They now have a new 3D imaging machine. The staff are extremely professional and very patient, and they walk you through, and they're so kind. And I just can't say enough about the hospital here and the staff, the doctors, nurses, all the staff helped me get through that journey.
You bet. And remember, we're all part of a team, too, because your friends, your family, they're part of your team. You're not just doing it for yourself. You're doing it for those around
right.
you who care, too.
Yeah.
So get out and take care of those things. And especially we highlight those now during Breast Cancer Awareness Month here in the month of October. Well, Mary, so glad that it has worked out well for you. Thank you for sharing your story. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity to help people and remind them to get those mammograms.